Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. Thanks for coming by. It's Friday. We made it through a whole week. Today is recap day. That means we're going to talk about everything that we talked about all week. And to refresh everybody's memory, on Monday, of course, we celebrated the fact that it was Veterans Day. And we talked about our vets. We talked about the problems that some of our vets have when they come home from a war. And that goes way back to World War I. In some cases, there are still some survivors from that, believe it or not. We talked about homelessness. I gave a number on the air, and I posted a number on my Facebook page about an organization that is all over the United States. It's a 1-800 number. And if you know a homeless vet, you can call for them, or you can hook them up with the phone number. If somebody's homeless, they don't have these the opportunity to make a phone call or to read a Facebook page or to even listen to the show. So it was really an open door for the rest of us to be able to help. I hope everybody took down the number. It's still on my front page of my Facebook. And if anybody needs it, they're welcome to call the show, and I will give it to you during the show. Tuesday was a great show because we talked about hoarders. And it generated lots and lots of responses. And I also found it incredibly interesting. I have Shelley on the line now. Good morning, Shelley.
Good morning, Renee.
How are you?
I'm doing very well.
That's
and how
good.
Are you doing this morning?
I'm good. I'm good. It doesn't seem like it should be Friday already. This week went by unbelievably fast.
And now I've been like on the wrong day like all week. There's like something in the air with that.
Well, you know, I think too, when it starts to get this time of year, our minds are all cluttered with all of the, even though holidays are an awesome time, a joyous time, a heartwarming time, they're also incredibly stressful. And I think everybody's heads get crowded with, okay, what are my responsibilities going to be? What am I going to do? Who am I going to see? Just a million different things, especially if you're somebody like me with the big family that I have. But it does get kind of crowded up there in my old cerebellum. So a lot of days I wake up and think to myself, okay, now what day is it anyway? So I can relate big time. So I mentioned Monday that we talked about, of course, it was Veterans Day, and we, in our own little way, recognized and showed our gratitude towards the veterans and what they have done to secure our freedom, and talked about the homelessness and the veteran hospitals and the different organizations that are out there. But like I mentioned, if you're homeless, and so many of our vets are suffering from different maladies that are a repercussion of being in one of the many altercations that we've had through the years, then you don't have a computer, you don't have a cell phone, you don't have a TV, you don't, you know, so if
I
put the responsibility on the rest of us. I put the number out there so that if somebody knows somebody who needs help, that's how they can help, is by making sure that they get an opportunity to call that number and see if somebody can help them. And then Tuesday was a great show. The Hoarder Show was, the feedback I got on that was funny, first of all, because people Facebooked me or called me on the phone and said, oh, my God, Renee, I think I'm a hoarder. And we would laugh together, and I said, yeah, I think all of us have just a little bit of that in us. And I guess it's one of those kind of things that you can't overanalyze, but if you ever watch the show, that's what I told everybody to do. I said, watch the show and put this back in perspective, because I think a lot of us save stuff, and a lot of us hang on to memorabilia, like you and I talked about, like my office and your office and things like that. But the real
the bottom line is the real big difference between being a pack rat, which a lot of people are pack rats, you know, and you got boxes and nuts and bolts, in your garage, or pieces of things you think might be useful later on, or you have a lot of memorabilia, or you have collections. And although that can lead into hoarding if you don't put it into check, that is not hoarding. Even being
right.
a pack isn't necessarily hoarding. Hoarding
right.
is when it defines you, when it actually takes over your living space, makes it dysfunctional or unhealthy, puts you in jeopardy, puts people that might come to see you in jeopardy, puts animals in jeopardy, because we discussed that some people hoard animals to the detriment
mm-hmm.
of the animals. You know, they started
mm-hmm.
out in the right place, but then they collected so many animals that they couldn't care for them properly, and it became a detriment. So that's when it goes from being pack rat-ish or liking a lot of animals. I mean, I had 150 animals in my house at one time, but they were all very well cared for. It was a rescue. I had, volunteers working for me. That's not hoarding. It was a controlled
mm-hmm.
environment. It was a clean environment. But when it goes past that, if you had 20 animals and you couldn't take care of them and they were living in slovenly conditions, that would be hoarding. And
mm-hmm.
that's kind of the difference between being a pack rat, a collector, and someone who's hoarding, is when your environment becomes unhealthy.
Exactly. And that pretty much sums it up. And like I said, if you still can't get a visual in your mind's eye, watch the show just one time. And first of all, it may help you a little bit. It may, if you are getting close to that kind of a scenario, maybe it will open your eyes and help you get a little bit of a handle on it. And or maybe you'll laugh at yourself and realize that maybe you're a little bit too much of a saver, but that you're not really suffering from the illness that kind of goes along with being a real hoarder. Safety, I think, was one of the things that touched Shelley and I the most. The safety, the cleanliness, the hygiene in a home and things like that, because we're very aware of things like mildew, mold, spores, things like that. And through the years at the Institute, one of the things that grew from I began in the Institute in 2001, and my first chemical-sensitive guest was a famous ballerina, and I didn't know how to deal with her because I knew some people didn't like certain smells. I knew there were people who had hay fever, who had allergies. I was aware of all that kind of stuff. Or being out in the springtime up north when everything started budding and growing, I was aware of people having runny noses and itchy eyes or picking up the cat and then touching their face. I knew about all that stuff. But chemical sensitivity, when you talk about a silent killer, that's a biggie. So when I saw some of these homes on Hoarder, that's the first thing I thought of, my God. But ironically, a lot of the people that they show on the show, and I don't know how factual this is, but most of them look to be okay health-wise. Would you say that's true, Shel? Okay, you saw some.
I told you I watched at least 12 to 15 of those shows.
Okay,
and many of people are already suffering from health issues. Some of them had pretty dire health issues and were not associating it to the condition of their homes, yet their family members were. And that was one of the reasons the family members had come. In almost every case, it was a family member or friend that contacted the show, not Porter, obviously, because they were living in a state of denial that there was anything wrong
right.
with the way they were. But some of them had really severe health issues resulting from the condition, resulting from the mold, from the bugs in their house, from the, you know, from the unhealthy condition. One woman had life-threatening asthma that it was just like overwhelming her, where she was constantly being rushed to the hospital to get these treatments. And then she'd go home, and within a couple of days, she'd have another one. Her house was just so hazardous, and she couldn't connect the dots.
Yeah. Well, I can imagine that, but like I say, I didn't see anything like that. I can certainly make the assumption that that's what's going to happen because of what I know about the mold and the mildew and the spores. And then, you know, we talked at length on Tuesday about some of the horrendousness, if that's a word, of bathrooms. In many of these cases, pipes would break and things like that, and people wouldn't have running water, and there would be feces, animal and human feces, all over in a bathroom. If you ever take a food handling course, which is a law in the state of Florida now, if you work in a restaurant, you're supposed to, whether you're a waitress, a cook, a dishwasher, everybody has to be certified in food handling. And the course is interesting, and I thought, I did it many years ago, but I thought I understood about, you know, not leaving things set out and doing certain things to keep your food safe and to keep it from growing bacteria and stuff like that. But I learned a lot of things that I didn't have any understanding of. One thing I think of every now and then because it shocked me. If you make a big pot of sauce, as our friendly Italians call it, gravy, red gravy, and all different kinds of meat in it, and sometimes vegetables, you know, peppers, onions, things like that, maybe zucchini, and you cook it on the stove, one of the questions on the test was, how do you keep that gravy or sauce okay? And I said they gave you choices, and I chose you let it cool off, keep it covered, you let it cool off, and then you put it in the refrigerator or the freezer, or put it in smaller containers and freeze it. That's wrong. When you cook something like that, you're supposed to take it at the temperature it was cooking at, simmering at. Cover it and put it in the freezer that way. And I was like,
oh, wow. See, I wouldn't even have known that still today.
I would have been worried about defrosting everything else in the refrigerator, so that would have crossed my mind, and or in the freezer. But I never knew that that's what you're supposed to do. But after I thought about it, the only time the bacteria is gone is when you have it at a certain temperature. So if you let it cool off, then it starts growing more bacteria. So then, you know, once I really thought it through, it made perfect sense. But because of things like that, you realize, and some of the hoarders that I saw, I watched probably 5 shows. And eating, of course, there wasn't much cooking being done, a lot of microwave. And that's another thing. Keeping a microwave clean is imperative to good health if you use a microwave. I'm against using a microwave because of the other things I know about microwaves. But if that's all you're cooking with and that's all you have to use and you get ready to prepare food that you put in a microwave, make sure that you keep your microwave cleaned out. And if it just means washing it out with soap and water and then wiping it down with something like peroxide or alcohol, just a thin coat of it and drying it, because it will also grow tremendous bacteria, a microwave. So at any rate, the Hoarder Show was a great show. Did you get any feedback from anybody about that show?
No, but I don't really go on the Facebook page and look at anything. I was assuming you were going to get quite a lot, so that didn't surprise me. But I thought it was a really good show, and I think that it's such an expansive subject. I think we could probably do a follow-up on it sometime in the near future.
Well, I've been doing a little bit of research on how what they can really do to help some of these people. And one of the things that we touched on very lightly, but I think would be fun to have one of our psychologist or psychiatrist friends on the show sometime to really analyze the different personalities of the people that are hoarders. Like the three people that I mentioned the other day, the twins, the single lady who her house was just horrible, and she would never let anybody in. Nobody else had been allowed in to see it. And ironically, most of these homes on the outside didn't look all that bad. Is that what you find when you watch the show, or is the outside as big a mess as the inside? I think I've lost Shell. But that's what I saw when I got into the, when they showed the outside of the houses. Almost all of them, the lawns were groomed. I don't know whether they were scenarios where somebody else took care of the lawns or what the story was, but they didn't look bad at all comparatively to the inside of the house. So that was a great show, and yes, we will do a follow-up and see if we can get some people on the show that would have something to say about the personalities of the people involved. Wednesday, we touched on all the stuff going on with teens again and drug use. And I think that there was a lot to be said about that. And we'll continue doing shows on that because that is a major, major problem today. And the fact that we have found some rehabs that will do both. The problem being that in some of these cases, the rehabs are not on the A list, you might say, and that upsets me a little bit. But apparently, it's true. It's for some reason, when the kids are involved, there seems to be more problems than if it's just adults. For whatever that reason, I don't know whether it's the fact that kids, I don't know, or maybe parents thinking that their kids should be treated differently or should get special treatment, or maybe the powers that be don't believe that that's a part of it, but I think that it's still a problem. I think that if we get to a point where we can really analyze what's going on with the family aspect of a teenager who's on drugs, I think we'll find that that gets pretty heavy. Are you back on, Shell? It's very strange because if you can hear me, Shelley, you're on my dashboard twice, and neither one of your calls are working. They're not
showing. Can you hear me now?
Ah, I can.
Okay.
I can.
Okay. Yeah, I had a little bit of a difficulty dialing back in, but I'm here.
you're still on my dashboard twice.
Wow, that's bizarre. That's really bizarre.
But you're not marking time, so it's very strange. I'm wondering, and I keep getting the time. What do you call that little thing that spins telling you that your computer's working?
Yeah. Oh, and then to us.
Times when your first phone number, because it still hasn't told me that I lost you at all. I just have you on there. So
yeah, well, the show does it clandestinely. It hears me for about 15 minutes. It's like, okay, we're done with her. So.
And you're exactly right. It's right on the 15-minute mark every time, Shell.
I know. It's like, oh, it's weird. I did start answering your question. I know you already went on to the youth addiction, but you had asked if I saw anything. Did you actually hear my answer, or was I talking to air? Because I don't know when you lost me.
What was your answer?
You had said that the question you asked was, did I ever see anything where most of the hoarders, the outside of the houses always look fine? And I had seen a few of the episodes were from people where the hoarding was actually on the outside of their property as well, and they were actually reported by people in their community because the outward appearance of the house was just so disruptive. It looked like a junkyard. You know, so you have this nice community, and then you have this one house that literally looks like a junkyard. And the officials went there, and when they looked at the inside of the house, they condemned the property, and they said, look, either you have to clean this up, or we're removing you and cleaning your property, because it would go against town codes and things like that. They would have so much in their properties that it actually created a hazard for the community, not just visual, but a lot of them that they would have animal infestations because they had so much stuff in their yards, and, you know, oh, it was just awful. So, yeah, in some cases it was private. The outside of the house, you would never, never know. And in some cases, it was so pervasive that it actually affected the community they lived in.
Well, that makes more sense to me than the three I watched. The three I watched, the twins' house was a little run down looking, but their van was so that they could barely sit in the front seats, and and you could see, because it had the big windows, and it was a panel van with the big windows in the back, and you could see all the junk in there. And and they had no seats in the back of the panel van, so there was just room for stuff. And even a lot of it was, of course, saved McDonald's and saved Burger King, and which brings us back to the fact that it's amazing that they survive in those kind of conditions. Because if you're eating a McDonald's or a Burger King cheeseburger that you bought yesterday or last week and you're still eating it, maybe you built such an immune system, like we talked about as well the other day, that, you know, you've mutated into something that can withstand all that bacteria. But under normal circumstances, that would be horrific for somebody to do.
Yeah, well, I don't believe that. I believe that these people have all kinds of health issues. You have to understand, one of the comments I had made the other day is that there's new research now, thank God, that's showing that the vast majority of mental illnesses, even some that you wouldn't think could be, are all physiologically caused. In other words, that there's some disorder in the physiology of the body that's affecting how the brain functions. And to me, that makes a lot more sense. There are mental aberrations. There are mental diseases caused by trauma. But this commentator was saying that more than 90% of the mental illness diagnoses are wrong because the source of the behavior is physiological, that there's some physiological disorder that if were corrected, the behavior would change, would become normal. So I think that a lot of times the fact that they do live in such unclean and unsanitary conditions could be causing like a vicious cycle, could be perpetuating it because they're not thinking properly. You know, you eat McDonald's every day, I'm sorry, you're not going to be healthy. There's no way you can. And if you're not physically healthy, that affects how the brain works. They're tied together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I agree with all of that. But the five shows that I watched, well, see, two didn't even stay with me. The three that stayed with me are the three that I've talked about. But and something else I meant to mention the other day, I didn't see in the five shows I watched, there were no men. Do you see a lot of men on the show?
Oh, yeah. I would have to say, I think you're right, though. I think the majority have been women. But I can think of two or three shows right now. In fact, the show that I was talking about where it spilled out into the property was an older man. And he had four or five kids. He had a big family. And his kids had been fighting with him for years to clean his property up. And it was the community that finally said, we had enough. This guy's running a junkyard, for God's sake. And his property looked awful. And he just had stuff everywhere. But I mean junk. And he had a car on his property that was, oh, God, I think it was like 30 years old. And he kept saying, I'm going to restore it. this thing was a rust bucket. There was nothing to restore. It was so overgrown. There were weeds growing around it. There was nothing to restore. It had literally rotted on its frame, and he wouldn't let them take it. And it looked awful, and it was filled with like animals and stuff. And he couldn't see it. He just didn't want. Every time he got something, it'd come to the property. But it got to the point where he started collecting garbage. So this was a man we were talking. He was an older man, and he was one of the ones who actually had like a nervous breakdown in the middle of the show. He started screaming at everybody to get off his property because they started throwing garbage out. He couldn't handle it. He had a complete meltdown. They did finally get him on track, and he continued. He was one of the ones where at the end they give you like a little recap. He did continue with therapy. And they were only able to, you know, on the show, I don't know if anybody's watched it, but on the show, you know, they have crews come in and do the cleaning, professional inside and outside type of thing. During the making of the show, they only got half of his property cleared, enough so that the town gave him more time, but all they did was give him another 30 days, and he had to have additional crews come in to finish the cleaning. It was that much.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Big Spike watches The Pickers. Frank and Mike.
Name of the show?
Pickers. The Pickers. I think that's the name of it. Pickers. Maybe American Pickers. I think just Pickers. It's
oh, okay.
Mike and they ride around in the van. They're partners. And I must tell you, some of the places they go are, some of them are real good collectors, and everything is put in warehouses or old barns and way up in the northern countries, out in the, you know, way out in the country where people have got giant pole barns and storage units and stuff like that, and they're very organized. And then some of the other ones they go into, I mean, they have to climb mountains of junk to go through and find things that they want to buy. So I said to my husband, I said, you know, some of these people should be on Hoarders. And he laughed. He says, well,
wow.
You know, it depends on how they've done it. And most of them are men. There's a few husband and wife teams, but most of the, it's an interesting show. I don't mind watching it for a while, and a lot of times they dig up some interesting stuff. But they kind of go together, those collectors, or that's what they call themselves instead of hoarders, but they're hoarding as well, and some of it is useless junk, you know, like broken
right.
metal, things like that. And when you said the cars, that reminded me, some of them have got cars that are so, you know, overgrown with grass and trees and everything, they're a part of the landscape now, so.
Right.
But they hang on to them thinking they're going to do something with them. So it is interesting, and I would love to have, like maybe Andy or Anthony or somebody like that to come on the show and talk about, amateurly, you could guess that people keep material things because their lives are empty. And one of my family members actually posted on Facebook, as a child, we moved every time we turned around. We never got comfortable anywhere. And now I'm a pack rat. I hang on to all kinds of stuff. My house is always, her house is beautiful, by the way. I've been in her home. It is beautiful. But it's a little overdone. You know, there's no wall space because she has pictures everywhere. She's a little bit like me. But she says it's because she's making up for all the things that she had to leave behind as a child when her parents would up and move all of them all the time. Now, that sounds perfectly right to me, and I believe she's probably right on about herself. And I would guess that in a lot of situations that is what it's about, you know.
Mm-hmm. And again, there's a lot of people that have experienced that where it could flip into hoarding. But that still is not hoarding, all right? Because if the environment's clean, if it's healthy, if it's non-destructive, if it's not putting anybody at risk, whether there's too much memorabilia around or not, you got somebody that collects things and it's like in every room of their house, that's not hoarding. It doesn't become hoarding until it becomes an unclean, unsafe environment, or it becomes so dysfunctional that, you know, that people can't come in there safely. And, like, if you have so many things, if you have a two-story house, this is, like, one of them, this woman had so much stuff on her stairs that she actually had to climb on the stuff in order to get to the second level. Well, obviously, that's hazardous. If you're climbing on things that can move under your feet, she couldn't get to the second story of her house except for climbing on boxes.
Right.
That's hoarding, you know. But just having a lot of stuff, even if every inch of your wall is covered with pictures and memorabilia, that's not hoarding. That's just, like you said, having an attachment to things because for so long in your life you lived out of boxes, and now you have a place that's your own and you want everything out of the boxes and up on the walls. I think a lot of us can identify with that. So there is a fine line there. Some of this behavior that you're talking about can flip into hoarding. So it's good that we do shows like this. It's good that that show is on TV because it can let people, can give them little warning signs before they flip into that. But there's a lot of pack ratting and collecting that is not hoarding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll go along with that. That all is the same way I feel about this particular problem. And hoarding is totally different. And that, as I said before, if you can't get a visual in your mind's eye from the things Shelley and I are saying, I would just say catch one of these shows, and maybe it'll put things in perspective for you, and maybe it will even help you reorganize your own place, your own nucleus, if you will. So I think it would be worth it. So let's move on though to the teen problem. And Wednesday and Thursday, kind of, we didn't talk about the same things, but they kind of go together.
Right.
We had Joel Smith on yesterday, who is just an awesome, kind, I don't know, he's even when you listen to his voice, he has a very calming, very gentle voice. And his program that he would like to put into effect, I think, would be an answer to the problem that we're seeing on a regular basis with teen drug use. Don't you think so, Shelley?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I mean, he wants to do something to give not the poorest of the poor, because there's lots of attention being given to that arena, and not everybody uses it. We have to be honest about this. There's a lot of things out there that are available for all of us, and for whatever reasons, we choose to not participate in that kind of help. So that's on our shoulders. So we need to make that clear. It seems like some days I'm only talking about the powers that be and finding fault in them, but I also am a big believer and a big advocate of taking responsibility for yourself. But when you have a 14-year-old who lives in a family that's functioning and that has a home to live in, and they got their two new pairs of pants and their two new shirts to start out the school year and some new kicks and some socks and everything, but money is an issue, and they really know from the get-go that unless they make really, really good grades and they're struggling with that, that there will not be college, that they're looking at a life of pretty much what they have right now. And in truth, if you're 14, a lot of times that doesn't mean anything to you. It means that you're fine. And if you ask a kid, they're going to look at you and say, nothing, you know, yeah, we have dinner every night, and my clothes are clean, and I'm not walking around with an iPhone or anything like that. You know, I have a Metro phone, but I like it, and I'm okay. What he's suggesting, though, is taking that middle, well, I would say it's low, middle, and helping those kids have something to look forward to with this savings plan. And I loved it. I mean, I think it will help our the one in the middle always, I said this yesterday, they always suffer the most because everybody thinks they're okay, because the middle means you're in the middle. And it usually creates a feeling of everything's okay with you because you are in the middle. You have a little bit of the good stuff, a little bit of the bad stuff, but you're functioning. And
both extremes always seem to get more attention. If you've got somebody that's really, really problematic, obviously they get a lot of attention because people are trying to get them remedial assistance and things like that. And if you have somebody that's like a superstar and they're straight-A student and honor roll and getting involved in all these clubs, they're getting attention because they're getting recognition because of that. Then you have a child that's sort of middle of the role but maybe a little underachieving in their place in that middle role, and they seem to get no attention because they're not enough of a problem and because they're not really making any achievements that are noteworthy, and they feel that lack of they feel the lack of attention being put in their place, and they sort of fade into the into the woodwork, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that that's gone on forever. I mean, there's so much talk. When I was a teenager, there was a lot of talk about the middle child being the problem child because they're not the oldest, so they don't get all the power. They're not the youngest, so they don't get all the baby, and they're in the middle, and it's often tumultuous for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be true on a really, really big scale. Like I said yesterday, if your mom is working and she's making $7.35 an hour, even if she's making $8 an hour, I didn't do it on a piece of paper, but I don't think that brings you much over $20,000 a year. Am I right, Shell? Can you do that math in your head?
Yeah, if they're making what?
Like, say they're making $8 an hour. $8 an hour times 40, that would be...
$320 a week, which is, what, times 50? So that's a little over maybe $15,000, $16,000 a year. I'm just doing it quick.
Yeah, so it's not even 20 a year. And then
not at $8 an hour. In order to get it 20, I think you have to be at $10 an hour. $10 and over, because that puts you at a little over $400 a week. And that'll put you at around $20,000 a year.
Yep. All right. So a lot of families are getting, with both parents, are surviving with a $40,000 a year salary.
Mm-hmm,
and
true.
That's all they're doing is surviving. And if you own a home today and you bought it in the last 10 years, your mortgage payment is absolutely, positively over $1,000 a month. And then if you add on taxes and insurance, there's not much left over for anything else. There really
That's
isn't.
Right.
So if you, when you talk about all the things that people want today, electronics, of course, are at the forefront. And shoes. If you want to not get bullied in school, you better be wearing nice kicks. Otherwise, that's one of the major bully problems is how you dress and what you look like.
I know. It's a big source of bullying. Oh, you're right.
Good sneakers are 70 and up. I mean, if you got a smart mom who goes around and shops, she might be able to get you a pair that you're not going to get picked on for 50. But you're not going to get them at Walmart, and you're not going to get them at Payless. You're going to have to go to a shoe store. Otherwise, every kid knows where your shoes came from. But that's just, but that's just one of the problems. Schools today offer free lunches. If you get in the free lunch line, everybody knows you're in the free lunch line. So that's another, stab at this and a stab at that. And then,
yeah,
of course,
really,
if you
do that differently. I mean, think about that. That's like a stigma. Can't you have something on you where they recognize you get a free lunch and just not charge you at the end? And I don't know. It just seems to me there should be an easier way of doing that than making the child stand out.
Well, I don't know that they are doing anything that has a big neon sign on and that says they're getting a free lunch. I think it's kept rather quiet. Okay. Kids pick up on what's going on immediately. They're just so smart. They just know.
Of course. Yeah, no, you're right. You're right about that.
So it's this idea that he's come up with, I see it changing that whole scenario. I just see, first of all, I see it bringing up the kid's morale and letting the kid know that they got something to look forward to. Anticipation for anything, or knowing that there's something at the end of a long road, is good for all of us, right? I mean, you know that, anything that we do, if we know at the end there's going to be some kind of a reward or some kind of something to look forward to that's a positive thing, is great for all of us. I am just, when he started talking about this yesterday, I thought, what an awesome, awesome idea. It's not like giving a handout.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not, let's take these poor kids and take care of them. And all the things that go with that kind of attention are demoralizing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, especially if your child is astute. And when you're demoralized like that, that's when all these other problems come up, the drug use and the even I talked to some young people the other day, they're all gambling. And in one scenario, one of their teachers is talking to him about who's going to win the game on Sunday and placing bets in the classroom.
Now, oh, wow. That's inappropriate.
Yeah, that's not such a big deal. I mean, you know, it's in good fun, and they all get something that they can talk about that's in common. But what if you got a kid that has a real addictive personality? You're opening up one of those doors again.
Well, no offense, but if they're not going to teach how to use credit cards properly and not create bills that you're never going to pay off for 20 years, and if they're not going to teach how money works and how to invest, and they shouldn't be talking about gambling. So they're not talking about, unfortunately, there's a lot of teachers out there that make the same mistake that some parents make, where they want to be friends with the kids so that they have a good rapport with them. You can have a good rapport with a child, but still have that, just maintain that level of respect, okay? The perfect example is me and my niece. All right, she and I are buddies. She's now 11 years old. We go out, we have fun, we joke around. I act like a kid with her, but I bring her up to my level. She absolutely respects me. If something were to go on and I would say something to her in an authoritative tone, you know, not in a mean way, not barking an order at her, but just authoritatively, she instantly responds. She's very respectful to me. But it's because, although I have fun with her, I still maintain that I'm an adult, you're a child, and I deserve your respect because I treat her with respect. You know, but when you step over the line and you get down to their level to have, like, a common interest with them, you're not elevating them. And I think it's irresponsible for the teacher to go there because gambling, of course, can be fun, can be harmless, like anything else, but you don't know what the psychology of those kids are, and if you're not teaching them the other aspects having to do with managing money, I think that's a bad idea. I think it's inappropriate.
Well, I do too, and I mean, I can see both sides of the story. I can see where it would be harmless and give the teacher an in so that the kids think he's cool and maybe he can help them more. You know, we can't always assume that it comes from a bad place. Learning how to deal with middle teens is
say the least, has to be innovative and flexible, because every one of them are different. I spend a lot of one-on-one time with all my teenagers for various reasons. Most recently, Michael and I have been a lot of times in the car, just the two of us. And we play, we laugh a lot, we talk about a lot of silly things. Michael has a lot of young ladies that like him, and so I get to pick on him about that. But something that you just said a minute ago is that there still has to be the underlying fact, which is I'm in charge. And I have been known to say that to all of my kids, even the ones that aren't kids anymore. In different scenarios, I still, you know, and this kid... Some parents might look at me and say, you know, you can't do that. There, matter of fact, I had somebody say something to me one day. I said something about one of my married children and his wife, and I was just kidding. But they looked at me and were shocked that I said something like that. And I thought to myself, you know, it's people that don't understand that you have to laugh at life, but you still have to maintain some decorum and some protocol, just like in every other field that you do, any workplace, any organization, church, school, and has to have a protocol. Otherwise, you know, it's like Lord of the Flies. And, I'm sorry. I wish it wasn't true. I wish that you didn't always have to have somebody that's top dog. I think I would like that better, but I've seen what happens when there's no top dog.
But we all have different personalities. You have leaders, you have followers. As long as the leader is somebody that truly cares about people and is not doing it to lord authority over people, but doing it because they like organizing and they're good with that. You know, you can have a leader in the group, yet you can have equal respect across everybody, you know. I mean, you and I are both leader personalities, but I've been in a position that every company I ever worked at to honcho projects and things like that, but I never saw myself as above the rest of my coworkers because I always respected them, and I saw everybody at the table was bringing something to the table. And I think if leading can be done in that respect, where you don't have the leader taking some sort of a step up above everybody, I think it works well. But there has to be mutual respect, you know, and the people have to respect the leader.
Well, and you're exactly right. But the point is that for some reason, I'm not really sure how to analyze it, but everybody needs somebody they can go to.
Even me.
That person,
even you and me.
Exactly. Everybody needs somebody that they can go to, and in a organization, the job place, again, you know, all those places need somebody who is going to be able to. You can say, you know, this is what's going on. What do you think I should do? And that person shouldn't mandate, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff right now on Facebook about the talk that Obama gave yesterday about the healthcare thing. And some people are feeling like he did a pretty good job, but of course the people who have been against him since day one, the diehard Republicans who think that it's important for them to just stand their ground because they say they're Republicans so they can't have any flexibility, then they talk badly about him like he's an idiot. Not anything but a man. Nothing else but a man. And a man who got put into a mix that was so messed up to begin with that all he did, honestly, is add to it. So I find no reason for why he should be continually blamed for everything that's wrong, because it was wrong before he stepped up there. Our world, government-wise and legislation-wise and leader-wise, has been messed up for a long time. But the point is that he still took the seat. We voted him in to a seat to be able to answer some of our questions.
Right.
And
twice.
just me and my own family. Do I always have the right answers? I wish. I wish. But you don't, you know.
Right.
But it's comforting to know that one of the teenagers in my house can come say, Graham, this is what's going on. What do you think I should do? So that we can talk about it together. I don't think the leader in any scenario is all-knowing. None of us are. I don't know anybody who's all-knowing. Do you know somebody who's all-knowing and can answer every question you have and have it be right?
Of course not. Of course not. But the nice thing about it, like when you talk about yourself with your grandchildren and with other people, you have adult friends that are always calling you for advice, is that even if you don't have the answer, just by talking it out with somebody who's receptive and has, you know, a pretty decent head on their shoulders can sometimes help you to figure things out on your own. You know, if I were to call you or you were to call me, sometimes in the process of discussion, you figure things out on your own. And just by having that responsible person, somebody that listens to you, that's got a good head on their shoulders, it may not happen that day. It may take a couple more days. But a lot of times the answers end up, showing themselves just by having somebody that you can speak to and kind of air your concerns or what your questions are.
Right. Well, and that's the whole name of the game, and that's the whole idea. So I'm going to pull us back on track because there's so many things in my head, and every time I watch the news in the morning, I get all this morning news, there were so many ridiculous things. A family of 10 walked into, I think it was a Toys R Us, with the parents leading the children and had them all steal electronics and stuff.
Oh,
and they
wow.
But they haven't caught them yet. And a 9-year-old in Miami, laying in bed asleep, somebody did a drive-by and shot this 9-year-old in his face. He survived his cheekbone, and they're thinking he's going to be okay. But I listen to this kind of news, and I think to myself, and we're worried about the kids. We're worried about the kids, and yet the adults, the people that are supposed to know better, be wiser, have more responsibility, have more life knowledge under their belt, they're the ones that are screwing up. And
wow.
Yes, we have drugs. Yes, we have teenagers involved in gang wars. But good God, Shell, look at the grown-ups. Look at the grown-ups.
Yep. Well,
every
a lot of times we've discussed this before when we hear, when we see bullying, like in the schools of one child to another child, a lot of times when you meet the parents, you see that the parents have a lot of the same ideals, maybe not as severe, but when you go from a parent to a child, a lot of times ideals become more exaggerated in the child because they don't have the maturity to temper them. So the parent might be talking about people that don't dress nicely or making derogatory comments, and then their kid goes to school and has a disrespectful attitude towards everybody that's not wearing a $100 outfit, based on the tone that their parents put to it. And a lot of times I think parents don't even realize how they're seeding the thoughts of their youth, and since they don't have the maturity to analyze it, now they blow it out of proportion.
Mhm. Mhm. Well, and you know, it's like everything else. If we concentrate on making us, even if you're the parent, and you think that the whole reason you're here now is because you gave birth to children and you're supposed to be making them into the kind of person that you want them to be. Before you can do that, you have to work on yourself and mm-hmm. be the kind of person that your child wants to emulate, not the kind of person that can just tell you that you're supposed to be good and then isn't.
One of the things I wanted to mention on the show a couple days ago is that, do you know that there's another Bully movie being made? Not by the same people that made the original Bully movie. This is by a man named Corbin Blue. He's been an actor. He's a childhood actor. He's on a TV show right now. And I saw him on Dancing with the Stars. I was channel surfing the other day, and I came across that show. Ironically, just as he was making an announcement about this movie he's making called The Day I Died, and it's an anti-bullying film, he said that he's a really good-looking guy, very athletic, but evidently he was bullied in school, and now his two younger siblings are in school, and he fears for them being bullied, so he made this movie. I don't think it's a true story, but it's based on true stories, and it's about a young man who gets bullied on Facebook, cyberbullying, and either attempts to commit suicide or does. I don't know the entire premise of the movie, but he said it's a project that he's wanted to do for years, and it should be coming out within the next couple of months. So
yeah.
I'm going to keep an eye on that.
Yeah, a couple people sent me a link to that, so yes, I did know about it, but I didn't think it had come to fruition yet. But yeah, it's in my notes to be paying attention to that. I've looked it up a couple times, and all you see is the trailer and a picture of Corbin and some things like that and the reason, well, what you just kind of explained. So yeah, I did know about it, and I've been kind of waiting to see how that comes to fruition. I think a lot of people today are aware of the violence and all the other stuff that's going on out there and the fact that it needs to be attended to. But again, I said this the very first time I ever talked about any of this. It's still about us. Kids kind of follow the leader, and we're not doing such a great job. We're great at passing judgment on the bigger leaders, finding fault in them, but we're still struggling with the man in the mirror, and that hasn't changed, not one iota. I don't see it getting better. I don't see it even being addressed. Why? Because it's just so much easier to point your finger at somebody else and try to fix them than yourself.
Exactly.
And
I think that's statistically the crux of the problem.
It absolutely is. All you have to do is look around. And it's blatant. But again, I want to touch base on Joel's idea because we're almost out of time. I love this. We will keep talking until it comes to fruition. Arise, reach inside for excellence. That's addressing the man in the mirror. That's what that is. That's making yourself a better person so that what you're doing for yourself rubs off on the people that you love. It can't do anything but be better for everybody. It's not a quick fix. There isn't a quick fix.
Right.
Certainly push us further into the place that we want to be than any other thing we can do. Any other thing. So I want to wish everybody a great weekend. If you've never been to the Commons on Royal Palm Beach Boulevard, Spike and I went there last Sunday. It's a green market. It is absolutely delightful. I'm not advertising for them. I'm just telling you it's a lovely walk. The weather has been gorgeous for it. They open at 9 o'clock. They have fresh veggies. I can't say that. And all kinds. They have juices. And they have some things that are, like jewelry and things like that. It was lovely. It's a nice outing for a Sunday morning and a nice place to get your walk in. So have a great one, everybody. Love you. God bless. And we'll be back Monday morning. Thanks, Shel.
Thanks, Renee. Great show. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone.
Bye-bye, babe.